Congratulations, boy.
Many gave their lives that we might stand here once again, united in the government of a lawful republic.
Gaius Octavian was henceforth to be regarded, for all intents and purposes, as my lawful son.
Gaius Octavian.
Well, here we are yet again.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Ray.
Hey, Cam, how's it going?
Oh, it's all right, I guess.
Yeah.
Episode 27 of the Augustus series. Today, we're going to talk about Marcus Antonius and the Parthian campaign.
Yeah,
oh, my God, this Parthian campaign. I feel like we've been talking about it for 20 years.
Well, we have, but it's time for Rome to finally get some payback on those Parthian motherfuckers for what they did. Sure, Crassus invaded them. Sure, he was going to take all their gold. Sure, he was greedy as hell. But as we all know, it was totally the Parthians' fault. And now it's time for them to pay up.
Yeah. Wow. So, yes, the Parthian campaign goes way back. 53 BCE, I think, is when Crassus, one of the original triumvirate, decided, how hard can these Parthians be? Went in, got his head cut off. They poured gold down his throat. And Caesar was going to go and revenge him, but they killed Caesar before he could. Anthony's been trying to do it ever since.
Yeah.
For 8 years, Antony's been trying to get his ass to Parthia, but he had other things to do, like fuck Cleopatra. I mean,
well, I think the words you're looking for are make love too.
He, you know, people would say to him, when are you going to do this Parthian campaign, Antony? And he'd just pull out his calendar and he'd go, well, let me see what I've got scheduled for the next 8 years. Like, oh, fuck Cleopatra, God. Fuck Cleopatra, fucking Cleopatra, fucking Cleopatra, fucking Cleopatra, fucking Cleopatra, 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 Cleopatra. Oh!
Cleopatra
anal
fucks
with
me.
Cleopatra.
Yeah.
She's great. Anal, yeah. Oh, that's a strap on. Then, like, you know, I can't walk for a week after the strap on.
So. I got it the week. And then after that, he actually does intend to leave her. He gets as far as Phoenicia, but that's when his wife Fulvia gets in trouble because she and Lucius were duking it out with Octavian, so he's got to deal with that. Finally, he starts to pay attention to some of the matters of his empire, but because he's Marcus Antonius, he turns over the whole Labienus Parthian problem to his lieutenant Ventidius while he deals with other things. So yeah, delay, hand off to someone else. And that's, you know, we're going to kind of pick it up from there. But yeah, the man's been busy. He's got different priorities than, say, oh, I don't know, everybody else on the planet who's leading an empire. But he's been having a good time, so it's okay.
Yeah, it's one of the things that a lot of the histories say about Antony during this period is he wasn't really a get shit done kind of guy.
He was a partier.
He was a partier, and we know that about him. But he's also kind of, as long as he's got a title and he's on top, he doesn't feel motivated to do much from that point on. It's just,
he needs a reason to get out of bed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he's just going to have a good time.
Yeah.
You know, with, like he's always done, except for brief periods when he was working for JC.
Right.
He's always just, you know, he's party man.
Yeah.
But as you say, so a couple of years earlier, the Parthians kind of realized that, well, these Roman triumvirs are duking it out amongst themselves. We might as well go and take some territory. Because eventually the Parthians know that the Romans are going to come for them.
Right. They're going to get their act together and head their way.
They're going to want to revenge, you know, what they did to Crassus. So
the
Parthians with Labienus, who, again, this is Pussy Bum's son.
Right.
They had him. He had a bunch of guys, so like Roman mercenaries that had gone over with him. They decided to start taking territory. They were taking Armenia. They were taking Syria. They were expanding the Parthian borders.
Right.
Because as you do, when you feel like your enemy is going to attack you, you want to put as much distance between your capital and your enemy's capital as possible by extending your borders as far as possible. It's not necessarily about conquering for the traditional reasons of conquering that we think about. Typically you conquer different places because you want their resources, you want their money, you just feel like killing a million people. But another main reason for conquering places is to build bigger and bigger buffer zones between right. your actual territory and your enemies. So if they come to invade, they've got to march through other countries before they even get to your country and your people.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, something we'll see a lot in as we go forwards in the Cold War show. One of the reasons why Stalin wanted to increase the borders of the USSR was as a defensive mechanism against Germany, Japan, and the United States.
Yeah. Yeah, he was like, yeah, if we ever fight again, it is not going to be on Russian soil. We're going to fight on someone else's soil and tear the shit out of their towns and cities and factories and roads and trains and villages and homes and cities. So, yeah, so he knew what he was doing. If I can give a little bit of background to Quintus Labienus Parthicus, which should tell you something, Parthicus. So back in 40 BC, Quintus Labienus and Pacorus, who was a Parthian prince, he was the son of Orodes II and his queen, and he had a wife who was one of the daughters of King Tigranes of Armenia, who was a very prominent figure in what's about to happen with Marcus Antonius. So they go in there and they cross the Euphrates and they attack into Apamea, which is just north of Tyre. So they try to attack, but there's too many Roman troops there, so they're not able to have any success. So Labienus uses the fact that he's a Roman, not a Parthian, and he starts going around to the different areas in Syria, and he gets the Roman troops on his side. He's like, you know, they don't care about you. Everybody's out for themselves, but join me. We will loot the fuck out of this place. By the time I'm done with you, you'll be nothing but rich. You can do whatever you want for the rest of their lives, and a lot of these guys do come over to him. So they go and they attack. In the area, Mark Antony's man, the governor, is Decius Saxa, and they try to take the city of Apamea. Now, the Romans who represent Mark Antony, they win this, but when Labienus is able to get all these other recruits, he attacks again, and they take the area, they take the town. Saxa's got to run north and try to get the hell out of there. And then, as we said a couple of episodes ago, Pacorus, the Parthian prince, is going to turn south, and he's going to conquer the Levant, and Labienus is going to turn north to follow Saxa, and he's going to try to go up all the way he can to Cilicia and conquer as much territory as he can. And this is going to become a huge problem, not for Marcus Antonius right away, because he's busy right now having fun, but it's going to be trouble for his various governors and the people that he has left in charge.
So, as we mentioned quite a few episodes ago, he sent one of his main generals, Publius Ventidius Bassus,
because you know I'm all about that bass, about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, 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 bass.
Woo! Yeah,
I'm shaking my bass.
He was all about the bass. Now Ventidius, we have mentioned him a little bit over the course of the series. He was from Picenum, the same region of Italy as the Pompeys.
Mm,
but,
that's right.
And this is kind of important, he and his mother were captured during the Social War.
Ah.
And both were marched as prisoners by Pompey Strabo, Pompey the Great's father.
Right.
And I think from memory, Strabo meant that he had like a wandering eye. It was Pompey the weird eye,
right,
through the streets of Rome. So Ventidius as a kid and his mother marched as prisoners through the streets of Rome.
Damn.
Do you want to explain to people who don't remember what the Social War was, Ray?
That was when, was that the one with the various tribes shit, not of the Romans?
Yes, the various tribes shit. And that started a war.
The Samnites and whatnot, they wanted equality with the citizens.
Yes.
Yeah, and so what Rome did not realize was at the time when they had been kicking so much ass in the area, they were doing it with Italian troops as well as Roman troops. So when this civil war comes, it actually goes very bad for the Roman armies for a long time, because they're fighting people who are just as good as warriors as they are. They are trained in the same tactics and strategies as they are. In the end, all the Italians are going to get what they want, but they have to bleed the hell out of Rome before Rome acquiesces to their demands.
Very good. So it was a civil war amongst Italian states versus against cities, Italian cities versus Rome to fight for rights. Yeah. So Ventidius is a prisoner. He ends up being forced to work in the Roman army as a muleteer,
mm-hmm.
a wrangler of pack animals.
Oh, that's not sexy.
But quickly starts to rise through the ranks of the Roman army. Apparently mm-hmm. comes to the notice of Julius Caesar during the Gallic Wars.
Wow.
Doesn't actually receive any mention in Caesar's commentaries, but did apparently perform highly enough that he became one of Caesar's favorites. After Caesar's killed, he doesn't take sides during the early stages of the whole shit fight between Antony and Octavian. Finally throws his lot in with Antony. After the second triumvirate is created, he is appointed at one point as a suffect consul. It's one of the consuls that's just like a fill-in consul. Look, I've been consul for a day. That's enough. Somebody else can have the job for a while. He was one of those. So not bad. He's gone from being a prisoner of Pompey Strabo to consul of Rome I don't know, 30 years or something. Not too bad. Antony then sends him to Parthia around about 40 BCE to deal with Pussy Bum the Younger and Pacorus, the crown prince. Now, what I love about this is the thinking that Ventidius put into this campaign.
Oh, right, about the improvement of weapons and tactics. Mm-hmm. If before we can get to that, I just want to say something real quick. So when Pacorus, the Persian prince, and Labienus are going, you know, one's going north, one's going south, when Pacorus is able to take Antioch, no Persian had been the master of Antioch since Alexander the Great had evicted them some 300 years ago. So they are truly making, you know, serious headway into Roman territory. And the other part about why Labienus, in case, because some people might be confused on this, the reason Labienus was able to get so many of the Romans in the area to come to his side or to not put up much of resistance, one, the idea of loyalty to your general or to your country or whatever has been just totally deflated. Whoever's got the money, you follow them. And also, a lot of those men were Republican soldiers back from the day before Caesar was killed. And Labienus is also known as a Republican soldier, so he's able to use that to bring them onto his side. So so Mark Antony finally hears about some of this disaster. He's received also news about his wife, who's having a big trouble with Octavius, and she's humiliated. She goes east to meet him, but she dies on the way, that kind of thing. We've talked about that before. So now for Mark Antony, he's like, I got two choices. I can stay in the east and I can fight these Parthians, or I can return to Rome and try to shore up my crumbling position. So he decides that for right now, and I don't think he made the right choice, but for now he decides to go to Rome, and that's when he patches everything up with Octavian. He takes Octavian's, what is that, his half-sister? Older half-sister as a wife. So that's when that happens. And that's when he makes the deal with Octavian. He says, look, I'm going to loan you a whole bunch of ships, 120 ships, so you can deal with Sextus, but you've got to get me 20,000 infantry from northern Italy. So when I do go to Parthia, I am going to be able to kick so much ass, because those are the really good troops that I need. Marcus Antonius is going to be good to his word. Octavius, not so much. But the good news for Marcus...
Hey, relax, God. I'm just your average Joe. Take a rest.
What the? What's that?
That's Octavian.
Okay.
So Antony's like, you're going to send me those 20,000 drinks? Like, hey, relax, God.
Now, when he does, and I'm not going to give it away yet, but when he does send the men that he promised, there is a 2 in the number that he sends to them. So anyway, so Marcus Antonius, he's freaking, he doesn't know what to do, but he does get some good news. He hears that Ventidius has raised 11 legions, and this is 39 BCE, and he has challenged Labienus, for, you know, he's starting to engage him for all of Asia Minor, and they're trying to figure out what's going on. But he knows that between Labienus, between the Parthians, they have got to change the way they fight. They've got to change their tactics, their weapons, their strategy, or the same thing is going to happen, just like what happened to Crassus years ago, 15 years ago, when they were able to literally, like you said, Parthian shots, ride in their horses, turn around while they're riding, and still be incredibly accurate archers. So they have got to change so much if they're going to go back into this and have any chance of success.
You know what smells good?
Bacon? What?
Isopropyl alcohol. Rubbing alcohol.
Does it?
I just started on the spraying rocks? It. Oh. I just started spraying it like up my nose to keep me awake when you were talking, and I think I'm addicted to
rubbing alcohol now. That was hurtful. I hope you do get addicted, bitch. So why don't you tell them about the different changes that Stidius, and that was just the luck beyond luck that he was put in charge. It could have been anyone else, and I don't think they would have been as thorough as this man has.
Well, I wanted to just finish something you were commenting on there, the Parthian shot. We did mention this, I think, way back in the Crassus episode.
Yeah.
So the term that we have in English now, the parting shot, where you say something cleverly as cutting, you leave the room, that comes from the Parthian shot, which was when these Parthian cavalry archers could ride backwards when they're retreating. They ride at you shooting arrows, and then they could turn around and keep firing arrows at you as they're running away.
And hit your ass.
Retreating.
Yes.
Yeah. Keep backwards and forwards.
They can stay out of range. It's brilliant.
That is your Ray and Cam dinner party moment.
That's right. Boom. You're welcome. Mm.
The other thing I want to do, just throw out there for listeners of our Alexander series, and if you're not...
Shame on you.
What the fuck? Seriously.
What's wrong with you? You too good? Sorry.
People might be wondering, who are these Parthians? What happened to the Macedonians? The Macedonians conquered all of Persia.
Yeah.
Who are these Parthians? Are they Persians? Are they Greeks? Are they Persians? Are they Macedonians?
Amalgamation? They? Yeah. Yeah, they're aliens. No, that's not true. That's not true.
Okay. Well, they are, look, to cut a long story short, they are sort of native Persians that have risen again. It's been obviously a few hundred years after Alexander.
Right.
And we're doing the Wars of the Diadoque at the moment on the Alexander series, Life After Alexander. And we will see a little bit how this plays out. But essentially, these particular guys, they're not remnants of Alexander's armies. They are Persians that have taken power again over certain parts of the old Macedonian Empire. But yeah, so Ventidius obviously realizes that he needs to come up with a way to defeat these Parthians that had so easily destroyed Crassus.
Yeah.
The first thing that he did was apparently strengthen the Roman shields.
That's important.
Because the Parthian horse archers had armor-penetrating arrows. Now, he had to update. So the Roman shields had been made of wood.
Right.
And they weren't able to hold up. So he added a layer of, I think it was bronze to the shields. No, bronze is too soft. What did he add to the shields? Was it iron? Maybe it was unobtainium, I think it was. It's the same stuff that Captain America's shield is made out of.
I knew that. Then they painted it red, white, and
don't know. Do you know how he toughened the shields?
I think it was some level, because you couldn't be too heavy, but I think it was some level of material or metal. Iron, yeah.
Did you try to carry an iron shield?
It was cast steel from the
thick.
But just think, you've got a shield in front of you. It's made of fucking wood. So when an arrow comes and it's been traveling 100 yards or whatever, it's coming down out of the sky. You put it right through it, and then right through you. So yeah, got to come up with something better.
If anyone knows, let us know on Facebook or send us an email. How did they strengthen the shields? Secondly, he pays attention to his own archery. So he had a bunch of auxiliary archers that could use the composite bows of that the Parthians used.
Right.
Reflex composite bows. So they were augmented to every Roman unit.
But I love that fight fire with fire. If they've got awesome archers, we need awesome archers. If they got these certain types of bows, we're going to get these certain kind of bows. And like you said, I want these guys spread out to be with every unit that I own. So nobody who gets attacked, these guys can actually fight back from a distance. Again, just brilliant basic military fight fire with fire.
And the other thing that he did, and this kind of amazed me, is they added slings.
Yeah, how are they not already a part of it?
Yeah.
Did they see David and Goliath? No, that hasn't happened yet.
Well, we've talked about slings before.
Yeah, we have.
Back when Octavian was besieging Mutina, there were slings with, this is for Fulvia's clitoris, inscribed on the stones.
Right. So why,
When they went out to, you know, battle in the field, slings weren't typically a part of their weaponry. But he added them in this case basically to shower the Parthian archers with a hail of rocks and stones to try and knock them off their horses and also to unsettle the horses.
Yeah, I thought that would
spoil the aim of the archers.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say, hardly ever does it kill, but if you line 50 guys up and they suddenly throw, you know, rocks at you from their sling, someone's going to hit you and it's going to throw off your aim. You're not going to be able to be, you know, poised, shoot your arrows and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's to fuck with the horses, fuck with the archers, and fuck with their slingers if they have any. And again, it's just brilliant using their tactics against them, because your real strength is your infantry.
When you say fuck with the horses, you don't mean like you do in Virginia on a cold winter's night. You mean throwing rocks at them, right?
Hey.
Or maybe a bit of both.
I don't judge what Aussies do for a good time. You leave us Virginians alone, all right? I thought that was in the contract.
I thought that was clear, yeah. So he's done quite a bit of prep here, and Ventidius then assembles his army in Cilicia or Cilicia, which is on the coast of Turkey, just near Cyprus.
Right.
And sends his cavalry, though, up to the mountain passes.
I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah. You want to talk about it then?
Yeah, so he sends his men up there because he wants to know what's going on. He controls the passes, that kind of thing. And again, he knows that if he stays on the flat land, that their superior cavalry, and they have heavy cavalry as well, that they'll just be able to ride around, outmaneuver, cut your men down, cut them off, that kind of thing. And so he's going to have his men cover the passes so they can't get back to the eastern part of their home. Once they come in to attack him, the cavalry is going to be behind them. His infantry is going to be in front of the enemy where this Titius is, and they're not going to be allowed to get out. They're going to be trapped. And again, because of the rough terrain, their one huge advantage, which besides the cavalry archers, the heavy horse will not be as effective in this hilly terrain. Shit. He is like Gaius Marius. He is rethinking, he is reinventing, he is re-sculpting every aspect of this coming campaign to have any chance of surviving.
Get back.
Could not. The opposite of that song. I don't know.
Yeah, so Crassus, when he went over there in 53, he was just so
stupid,
arrogant and confident in his superior capabilities.
Yeah.
That he just let the Parthians decide where the battle would take place.
And didn't he go through like Ventidius, the desert? The desert, remember? He had that way to go around, but he said, going through the fucking desert, it'd be fine.
Nah.
It'll work out.
It's just a desert. Alexander went through a desert, lost 80% of his men, but, you know.
I could do it.
So, but Ventidius, smarter guy. He's going to pick the site of the battle. As you said, he knew that flat ground favored the cavalry of the Parthians. The hilly terrain kind of neutralized that advantage. So he situates himself on top of this steep, sloping hillside overlooking the mountain pass that Labienus and the Parthians are going to have to ride through in order to get home. They're going to have to charge up a hill over broken ground to get at him.
That's not good. Yeah.
So Labienus arrives. He knows that Ventidius is there. He surveys the situation and decides, we attack at dawn.
This is going to work brilliantly. I've got my Parthian archers. Everything's going to be fine. Yeah, we got to run uphill, but fuck it. It's going to be good because I can, I got, beside my archers, I got my heavy cavalry. I can bash in any Roman wall of mass slingers and bowmen. I can run them right over. This is not going to be any problem. Prepare for victory.
And you have to think that if Ventidius was playing a significant role in the Gallic campaigns, he would have known Pussy Bum's dad.
Yeah.
Pussy Labia Majora Anus, as he was known. And yeah, that's kind of going to be weird, you know? Imagine going to battle, preparing for battle against somebody you knew's son.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the Labienus decides they're going to attack at dawn, and at dawn the Parthian archers start charging upwards.
Yeah,
out of the early morning mists.
Get it, guys.
The hill.
Yeah.
And they get attacked by this wall of slingers and bowmen with these big fucking composite bows just raining down on these horse archers as they're trying to make their way up a rocky hillside. Yeah. Their horses are a little bit slow, stumbling a bit. It's not a not an easy ground for them to ride over. Because of that, they're trying to the horse archer guys are trying to guide their horses up these rocky crevices. They're not able to fire their arrows effectively. The Romans hold their fire until the horsemen are halfway up the hill.
Oh my
God. They can't get back easily.
Right.
And then at Ventidius's signal, just this massive hailstorm of stones, arrows, and spears. One of the downsides of these Parthian horse archers is they didn't have shields, apparently. So their horses are just getting beaten, the fuck beaten out of them by stones and spears and arrows, as are the archers, including the Parthians' shock cavalry called the cataphracts.
Yeah, I thought this was brilliant. The cataphracts. Yeah, personally, I thought Labienus and the Parthians was the band. You know, that's the singer, that's the band. But yeah, the cataphracts should have their own band. But yeah, so they send up their light infantry. Their light cavalry with the arrows, and that doesn't work. The Romans are able to stop that. So they're going to come with their heavy horse now. Because they're heavy horse, they know they can just ride the fuck right over these archers and their bowmen. They've got some kind of protecting for themselves and for their horses. This should work out brilliantly. It's never failed before. But again, they have to ride uphill. The horses are way down, and there's a bunch of rocks, so they can't just ride straight. They can't amass their numbers, and they're going to run into the Romans. The Romans take the brunt of it as best they can. Then they send out their infantry, and obviously the horses just can't run away real fast because they're way down, and the Roman infantry are able to come out of their holding position and slaughter these guys left and right. It's nothing but mass confusion. The horses can't get away fast enough. They eventually do try to run away, but a lot of them are killed trying to get out of there. So the Romans were able to take out a lot of their light horses. They're able to take out a lot of their cataphracts. It is a complete victory for Ventidius because he redesigned how his side fights. It reminds me of Philip II. Was it Philip II? Philip II, who reinvented all of Macedonia's fighting tactics before Alexander. He thought it through and he came up with a brilliant plan, and the enemy let him fight where he wanted to fight. A huge no-no.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty stupid on behalf of Pussy Butt Minor, Labia Minora.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, bad. Yeah, just amateur hour, man, seriously. So, but these, I want to get back to the cataphracts.
Yeah.
If people don't know what a cataphract is, it's a horse covered in armor.
Damn.
With a rider covered in armor as well. So imagine these things. Imagine like a 1,000 horses covered in armor coming at you. Very effective if you're trying to break a Roman line on level ground. But horses with armor and riders in armor trying to get up a hill, not so great.
Yeah.
So Labienus that night disguised himself
as a French maid
and fled. He heard that was the thing. It was kind of it was trendy.
Uh-huh.
And fled, but he is caught and executed.
Yeah, his French accent wasn't as convincing as his costume gave him away.
Yeah.
So he pays the price.
He said, I can speak French. Arrivederci.
And then
that's Italian. And B, that's Brad Pitt doing bad Italian.
And they ran him through.
He goes, oh, fuck. Fuck.
And those were his last words. Oh, fuck me.
They're like, you're a Roman. You should know what Italian is. And you should be able to sound better than Brad Pitt doing fake Italian.
Oh, I love that movie. Yeah.
Oh, it's great.
So Labienus Jr., the little whatever. No more.
Yeah, Labia Minora.
Labia Minora.
Little Pussy Lips, as he was known.
He is no more for this world.
And a little time after that, and so the point of all of this is it's Ventidius's victory. Yes,
yes.
Technically working for Antony. Antony sent him to, go take care of Pussy Lips Minora. But it was Ventidius all along the way. He's the guy that designed the tactics. He's the guy that came up with the plan.
Mm-hmm.
He's the guy that executed the plan. So it's all... credit to All About the Base. Now, not long after that, he hears that the crown prince, Pacorus, depending on which source you read, is leading a new force to invade Syria.
Yeah,
because the plan that Ventidius comes up with here, just fucking one of the most genius stories. Out of all the stories we've talked about over the last few years, this is one of my favorite stories.
Yeah. Well, I just want to say real quick before you jump into it. So you have to remember that Ventidius has taken care of the right hook that has been planned. Now he's got to take care of the left hook, which is the crown prince. So he's coming down, and I'll just set it up real quick and let you talk about it. So he has got to cross over from Parthia to invade Syria. And, of course, he's got to cross the Euphrates. Now, Ventidius sends spies to Pacorus. And I'm not sure the details here, but basically they say to Pacorus, no, you should cross at your usual place over the Euphrates River. Everything will be fine. Everything fine. Just cross where you normally do. And Pacorus thinks that, obviously, he's being tricked. There's going to be a trap. He says, fuck that. I'm going to cross somewhere else. I'm going to go further downstream. Now, it's going to take me a couple more days, but I feel that if I don't cross where everybody's expecting me to, everything's going to work out just fine. So he crosses at a different place. But what that does, and again, this is utterly brilliant, it gives Ventidius time to not only get his men into place, to pick the very spot that he wants to fight at, and to set everything up. So again, if the other sides are stronger than you, they've got more men, they've got better tactics. If you can pick the battlefield, if you can pick how the battle at least will start out, that's a long way to going towards victory. And that's exactly what Ventidius does by buying himself more time by manipulating the rightfully paranoid Pacorus.
I love the fact that you say, I don't know the exact details, but then tell the story anyway.
Well, no, I would love to know. Like,
if you don't know the exact details, why didn't you find out the exact details and tell everybody the exact details?
You know what? I guess the new nice cam from the previous episode is gone. Do you know the details?
You don't know the details, but you just decided to half-ass tell the story anyway.
Right. No, I found it interesting that they were able to pour this leprous distillment into Pacorus's ear, but I would just love to know the details. Like, how do you convince someone that you think that to get them to think that you're giving them good advice and yet they know that you're probably tricking them? I couldn't find any details. Did you find the details of that?
Oh, yeah. I found the details.
Oh, bullshit. Well, that's just great. I'm glad one of us is. Okay, here's what we're going to do.
I found the details.
Edit out that one line that I made and then edit out this fight and then just fucking tell us the story.
No. I'm leaving it all in. No. Nice Cam's gone. You've had an hour and a half of Nice Cam. I've run out of Nice. I've got no more Nice left.
He's been replaced by Cam Cam. Please tell me. I would love to know. Yes.
So here's how Dio puts it.
Dio.
Ventidius heard the Pacorus was gathering an army and invading Syria and becoming afraid since the cities had not yet become quiet and the legions were still scattered in their winter quarters. He acted as follows. Right. So here's the point. Ventidius's legions are scattered in their winter quarters and he hears Pacorus is on his way. And so he needs to buy time to get his guys all together in one place to defend against Pacorus. So what he does is brilliant. Again, Dio says, knowing that a certain prince, Cneius, with whom he, too, was acquainted, favoured the Parthian cause, he honoured him in all respects as if he had his entire confidence and took him as an advisor in some matters wherein he could not be injured himself and yet would cause Cneius to think he possessed his most hidden secrets. Having reached this point, he affected to be afraid that the barbarians might abandon the place where they customarily crossed the Euphrates near the city of Zeugma and use some other road farther down the river, for this other place, he said, was a plain and convenient for the enemy, whereas the former was hilly and best suited to his own forces. He persuaded the prince to believe this and through him deceived Pacorus also. Nice. Now, this is where it becomes brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
So Ventidius pretends to be taking Cneius into his confidence, knowing full well that Cneius is going to pass this information on to Pacorus.
Right.
But what Ventidius is saying to Cneius is, I hope they don't normally cross the play where they no- shit. Let me start again. I hope they don't cross the Euphrates where they normally do.
Mm-hmm.
I hope they cross somewhere else because it would be really bad for me if they cross where they normally do. Now this gets passed on to Pacorus, but Pacorus,
aha,
because he's not an idiot.
No,
he says, well, obviously, you knew that Cneius was going to tell me that. So you really want me to cross where you're saying you don't want me to cross.
Brilliant.
So I am going to...
Jesus.
It's that scene from fucking Princess Bride, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I clearly can't drink in front of the cup in front of you. Know.
Yeah, that's right. That's what's going on. But little do they know.
It's a trap.
So anyway, Pacorus decides that it's a trick and decides that he will cross the river much farther downstream.
Wow.
Which is exactly what Ventidius wanted to do, purely, as you said, because it would take Pacorus an extra few days to get down there. And Ventidius would have extra time to get his forces together.
Nice.
But it gets better than that.
Yes.
When Pacorus gets to the Euphrates, Ventidius lets him cross unopposed. The Parthians cross. They go, well, that was easy. They keep moving. There's a walled town of Gindarus. Sits on a small hill.
Mm-hmm.
They stop. They look around. They can't see anything happening.
They put their ears to the ground.
Right. Yeah, can't hear anything. they sniff the air. So
They start marching towards this town. They think it's deserted.
Yeah, it is.
When they're within range, the gates are flung open.
Uh-oh.
Ventidius and his troops come streaming out, charge downhill.
Screaming obscenities. I don't know.
Yeah. The Parthians don't have their archers up the front. They've got their cataphracts, the armored horses that they throw at them. But again, it's on a slope.
Right.
Not ideal for horses wearing entire suits of body armor. And they're overwhelmed with the slings that Ventidius has prepared for. And they're forced back across the river.
Damn
heavy
right.
losses, including the crown prince, Pacorus, aww. Who is killed. And the beautiful synchronicity of
right.
this is that this happens on June 9th, 38 BCE, 15 years to the day that Crassus was killed at the Battle of Carrhae by Pacorus's father. Well, he wasn't there, Orodus, but his general.
Right.
So there you go. Avenged. Took 15 years, but Crassus
but
has been
happened.
Avenged.
Now, I'm guessing that this is really big news. So Ventidius immediately took out his Mac, opened it up, and sent an email to everybody. Guess what, bitches? Revenge is ours. Is that what he did?
Yes, something like that, yes. What he actually did was cut off Pacorus's head.
Damn.
And sent it on tour.
Aww.
I don't know who its opening act was, but it went on
his right
very
hand.
Popular tour.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very popular tour. Sent him around to the rest of the Syrian towns. Basically just as a warning,
yeah.
I guess. This is what happens if you take on the Romans, motherfuckers.
Lepidus is dead. Here's the head of Pacorus. Everything is now safe in this area. Yeah. So everybody's
and when
happy.
News of yeah. his except
yeah. I'm sorry.
Who's not happy?
So as word spreads throughout the Roman Empire, they're celebrating, there's rejoicing, yay! Even the orgies, you know, have a little uptick to their intensity. Everybody's happy, that is, except for Mark Antony. Obviously, his subordinate is getting all these victories. He's also going to be getting all the glory. And like Octavian, he knows that he has to be in the Ura at least to take the credit from the subordinate. So he is going to rush back to the east as fast as he possibly can from Rome, or excuse me, from where he's at. He's with Cleopatra, I believe. And he's also going to send a letter to tell Ventidius to cease and desist. So Ventidius knows that he has gone as far as his commander's going to let him. He does bitch slap some of the tribes in the area who were supporting the enemy, but basically he just kind of takes it easy. He does lay siege to a city called Samosata. It's on the upper Euphrates, and that is where Marcus Antonius, dashing as fast as his old ass can go, finally gets there, says, okay, I'm in charge now, you can go. So we're going to get into that, but basically he praises this man, sends him off to Rome, but now he is in charge, so he can say he was there when some of it happened, and obviously take all the credit for it.
Yeah. Yeah, he basically dismisses Ventidius, doesn't even keep him around, sends him
no.
back to Rome.
He's got to. He's got to.
Thanks very much, Ventidius. You did an okay job.
Good job.
Fuck
good
off.
Job.
Fuck good job. Now, there was a rumor, apparently, that Ventidius had taken a large bribe from the people of Samosata
right.
not to destroy their city. So he's
yes.
laying siege to it, but really not, just sort of hanging around outside. Anyway, Antony comes and goes, all right, well, I'm in charge now. Now I'll show you how you really lay siege to a city.
I want to go out on the limb and say Marcus Antonius is one who spread that rumor.
Yeah.
To ruin his reputation.
Dio writes, when he had got to this point, Antony suddenly came upon him. And so far from being pleased, was actually jealous of him because he had gained the reputation of having carried out a brave exploit independently.
Accordingly, he not only removed him from his command, but employed him on no other business either, then or later. So that's it.
That's crazy.
Ventidius, done. You two successfuls. Gets back to what Agrippa was saying in an earlier episode. Look, when you're working for these guys, you want to be successful, but not too successful.
Hold back.
Because they don't want you to look too good. So he goes back to Rome. He is awarded a triumph.
Good for him.
But here's the thing. He went from being a prisoner in the social wars, not only to being consul, but to getting a fucking triumph.
That's amazing. The Romans do love ability. They have many flaws, but they certainly will acknowledge and reward ability when they see it, and also when it serves them.
I think that's an amazing achievement. You know, to go from one to the other in a lifetime. And he survives and retires quite happily, as far as we can tell. He sort of disappears from history after he has his triumph. But
I was just going to say, so he gets his triumph, the first victory against the Parthians. This is a huge fucking deal. So what could Marcus Antonius possibly do to upstage his own man? He's got to come up with something. But here's my thing. Just imagine Octavian, you know, Agrippa kicks the shit out of Sextus, and Octavian comes in and says, good job. Okay. Now off you go with Lepidus. You're retired now. Thank you for everything. Please fuck off. You know, he just wouldn't do it because he knew he needed him. But Marcus Antonius, for whatever reason, thinks he doesn't need anybody, that he is the superior military strategist or soldier or whatever, and he's going to take over. But whatever he does, he's got to raise his game to outshine Ventidius.
Yeah. I want to read a section from Shakespeare's Antony and Cleopatra.
Aha.
He's got some beautiful stanza here. supposedly, this is Ventidius. He's talking to Sosius, who will turn up in our episode a bit later on.
All right.
He says, put my Shakespeare voice on. No. I have done enough. A lower place, note well, may make too great an act. For learn this, Silius, better to leave undone than by our deed acquire too high a fame when him we serves away. Caesar and Antony have ever won more in their officer than in person. Sosius, one of my place in Syria, his lieutenant, for quick accumulation of renown, which he achieved by the minute, lost his favour. Who does in the wars more than his captain can, becomes his captain's captain. And ambition, the soldier's virtue, rather makes choice of loss than gain, which darkens him. I could do more to do Antonius good, but 'twould offend him. And in his offence should my performance perish.
Mm.
I like that. Who does in the wars more than his captain can, becomes his captain's captain.
Nice.
So, Antony is going to lay siege to Samosata himself. Now we'll show you how this is fucking done, boys. Everyone stand back. The big man.
Cracks his fingers. Stares at the wall for about 20.
Righty then. Look, it's been a while since I've laid siege. Yes, admittedly. Actually, I've never laid siege to anyone ever because I haven't had to. But. How hard can it be?
How can it be? I've read some books, and so he stares at the wall for about a good 20 to 22 minutes. All right, I'm bored as fuck. Oh, my God, why didn't anybody tell me sieges were like this? Alexander never said anything about being bored. How many women? Where's the guts? You know, let me best
bring
a cow
some wine.
That's right, bring me some fucking wine. So he probably takes a rock and he inscribes a little note on it. I don't want to be here. You don't want me here. Please fill in the blank how much money you'll give me to leave. And he throws it over the wall or something to that effect.
Well, before that, to give him his due credit, he huffed and he puffed.
Oh,
and he tried to blow their house down. And he was like, oh, fuck. I mean, he picked up a rock, he threw it at the wall, it bounced off. He was like, jeez.
This is hard. This is so hard. I can't do it.
Mom.
Well, if you date whores and prostitutes your whole life, yeah, you're going to think you can do anything. But this is man's work now. This is man's work.
So, to cut the long story short, he negotiates a settlement with Samosata. They pay him to go away. But here's the thing. According to Plutarch, they paid him 300 Greek talents, the equivalent of more than 7 million sesterces to go away. But they had offered, supposedly, Ventidius 1,000 talents to go away.
Oh, shit. He better keep that to himself.
But he didn't take it. He didn't take it. But then Antony comes and accepts 300 talents and leaves.
Marcus Antonius is a whore.
But Antony doesn't get accused of taking a bribe, even though he actually does take a bribe.
Yeah. When you're the general, you can do shit like that. When you work for someone else, you can't take a bribe. It makes perfectly good Roman sense in a fucked up kind of way.
Right.
If you're in charge of the campaign, you can take a bribe because you're the one, you know, you have no boss.
Mm.
If you're number two,
if they're going to bribe anyone, they have to bribe you.
That's right.
Yeah.
Get it right, people. Right. Yeah.
So,
but Mark Antony,
he returns to Athens to spend the winter of 38-37 BCE.
Yeah. Now, hold on. Before that, I think before he goes, I'm not sure because the timeline's a little fuzzy here. The Parthians had installed a Jewish king in Jerusalem. And so from what I read, he leaves here, swings down there, grabs that guy, has him arrested, flogged, and then, you know, crucified. And he puts his old friend in charge, Herod, the one we know as Herod the Great.
Yeah, except he didn't really do it himself. He sent someone else to do it.
Right. Okay, yeah. So he had that done. So he reclaims all that territory that had been lost since he was getting horizontally to know Cleopatra.
Yeah, I'm going to cover that in a lot of detail rather than that
the
Cliff Notes version in our next episode.
Okay, feel free to edit that out. You didn't have to hurt my feelings, but that's fine too. Don't edit that out, whatever you do.
So he goes back to Athens for the winter, but in the summer of 36, Antony is finally ready to launch the campaign on Parthia in reels, for reals this time. And he's going to go himself because he the man.
That's right. These bitches have got it coming to them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I think we should leave that to the next episode.
Yeah. But first, let me just say, Parthia is shaking. Not so much.
No, they're shaking.
Oh, no, what do we do?
Well, he has a big army, but
yeah.
We're going to do another review. This is much shorter than the last one from last episode. This is another American, T-Fin27, not for the faint of heart.
That's true.
Paddy/Mick/Fenian, for one, who lives in Chirac, Chicago, for those who are not aware of the insane level of gun-related murders in my adopted home.
Yeah.
So he's an Irishman who lives in America, then, not an American.
Right.
Enjoys listening to the over-opinionated kangaroo shagger and this Yankee flunky. It is well-researched by Skippy and his girlfriend. Plus, you get called my girlfriend. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well-researched by Skippy and his girlfriend. Plus, I enjoy the regular tangents on obscure ancient history topics. And yes, some people do enjoy the detail. No Cliff Notes for me, please. Keep up the great work, fellas, and hope you guys continue on podcasting on this topic after you are done with Augustus, as it would be great if you did the complete Julian-Claudian dynasty all the way through to the death of Nero. Oh, fuck, that's asking a lot.
That is asking a lot.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, because he called me Cam's girlfriend. Hold on. MapQuest. Okay, I can be in Chicago or thereabouts in 12 hours. You've got 12 hours and 10 minutes to live. Enjoy your time. Okay?
What would you do to him?
I would...
Hit him with your handbag?
Seriously, what are you
hey,
gonna do?
Hey, that's a heavy handbag. You're it could hurt, especially if you get a good swing going. Something?
Yeah. Probably. Thank you, TFinn27. Send us an email, Ave@lifeofcaesar.com with your address. We'll send you a thank you gift. I don't think I said that in the last episode either. Maestro Rogues.
Maestro, he is getting something, yes.
You send us an email for your essay as well if you haven't already, and we will send you a thank you gift for that lengthy, slightly pissy, but mostly good review from the last episode. All right. Well, I think that's close enough to an hour. That'll do for today.
Yeah.
We will be back soon with the rest of the Parthian campaign.
Yeah.
Thanks, Ray.
See y'all's next week. And sing.
Thank you.